And now, live from San Francisco and broadcasting live and worldwide on the Double Wide Network, it's Blissful Living with Rochelle Marie Lawson. Are you overwhelmed, overworked, and overloaded? You are not alone. Reduce your stress and live a more blissful life. Feel your very best. Be the best that you can be for your friends and loved ones. And now, here's your host of Blissful Living. She is the queen of feeling fabulous, Rochelle Marie Lawson.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Blissful Living. It is my pleasure and my honor to be here with you. I am the queen of feeling fabulous, also known as the wellness architect, and my name is Rochelle Marie Lawson. And if this is your first time tuning into us, welcome. You're in for a treat today. We have a phenomenal guest that's going to share wisdom with all of you. And if you are a weekly listener, well, welcome back, because you know what to do. Grab a piece of paper, a pen, or pencil. Sit back and relax. If you're driving, you know, sit back and relax, and but pay attention to what's going on the road, because we are going to have a great show in today's hour with you. Now, before I get started, I want to thank the sponsors of the show, the Health Healing and Wellness Company. You can check them out at healthhealingwellness.com. They have some great specials as we head into late summer, early fall. One of them is their 7-day detox program. You can check that out at the 7daydetox.net program. And if you've been a little stressed with regards to your kids going back to school, whether it's, you know, elementary, middle school, high school, or college, and you just want to learn how to release some of that stress or eliminate it completely, then I suggest you check out their Erase Your Stress program at erase-your-stress.net. And lastly, if you are just looking for some really wholesome ways to enhance your health and well-being, then most definitely you want to check out what they have to offer at healthhealingwellness.com. And so to get started, I have to thank the girl behind the scene who keeps us sounding absolutely phenomenal, my producer, Wendy. So if you like the way we sound, you send us a comment or something, and it all goes to Wendy. Also, one more thing I want to share with you is a Blissful Living site. If you are interested in hearing these shows over again, or you want to share them with your friends, we highly suggest that you go to blissfulliving.com and check us out, like us, and share us with your friends. That way, more people get enlightened and awakened as to how they can go through their life, reducing or eliminating stress from all aspects of their life, so that we could collectively live much better here on planet Earth. And so now let's get going with the show. Today's guest is Dr. Dionne Metzger. She is a board-certified psychiatrist whose approachable demeanor, determined spirit, and caring attitude have allowed her to have a valuable impact on those around her. During her college career at Emory University, she served as president of the Minority Pre-Medical Society and was a Dean's List honoree. Now, Dr. Metzger was awarded the Pfizer Minority Medical School Scholarship and earned her Doctorate of Medicine from Morehouse School of Medicine. In addition to obtaining her degrees, she also completed medical research at Stanford University right here in the Bay Area, Stanford University School of Medicine and Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or better known as the CDC. She completed her psychiatry residency at Emory University School of Medicine, and Dr. Metzger's primary goal as a physician is to educate people about the importance of mental wellness. She has been featured on numerous national television shows, including CNN's HLN Network, Jane Velez Mitchell Show, HLN Now, and Aspire TV. So we actually have a real big-time celebrity here with us today. Not that all the other guests aren't either, but this is really special. And basically, at the end of the day, what she says is, knowing I have made an impact in encouraging someone to live a happier and healthier life. And so I want to welcome Dr. Dionne Metzger to Blissful Living. Welcome, Dr. Dionne Metzger. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
I'm absolutely fabulous. It's a pleasure to have you. I've had other positions on this show, and me being a nurse, you know, I've kind of played with all you guys in some arena over my last 25 years as a registered nurse. But I don't think I've ever had a psychiatrist on. So this is going to be really interesting because
wonderful.
I know you have some different takes on how things are happening and how we see things and what we can do to improve. And we're going to talk about, you guys out there listening, basically, the title of our show, I think we're going to call it today, is Are You in a Slump at Work? And if you're in your career and you're just feeling like things are just kind of stagnant, or you're tired of it, or you're burnt out, or you want something new and exciting or different, or whatever the case may be, then I'm sure Dr. Metzger is going to share with you some wonderful information that you can begin to use immediately after we're done with the show today. So I want to jump in because I know this is a big thing. Me particularly, you know, being in the Silicon or the San Francisco Bay Area, Northern California, Silicon Valley, they kind of all merge together, as you know, as a person that has made some footsteps on Stanford's campus, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on with regards to people and their careers. And so what I want to ask you are, what are some of the signs that you may be in a slump for those out there listening who may not even recognize that they may be in a slump or a funk with regards to work?
Well, one of the first things I always notice is that if you notice that you're just not as motivated to get your work done, if you feel like you're dragging throughout the day, and as a result, you're less productive at work. You're just not as efficient as you originally were. And you just kind of get stressed out the night before you have to go to work. I call it the Sunday night gloom when the weekend is ending and Monday is coming. And like that Sunday evening, you're like, oh gosh, time to go back to work. And that's always a sign that you're not really happy at work and that you might be in a slump. Another thing is that you start just being less patient. You know, with your coworkers, you might be a little bit more snappy. You might just notice that, you know, you're just not as patient with others as you used to be. So those are usually like the top signs that I notice when people are starting to enter that slump.
Now, with regards to those, because I think anyone out there listening can relate to having that Sunday, Sunday day, evening, afternoon, night, whatever you want to call it, funk, so to speak, because I have experienced that at times as well. It's like, you know, oh, I don't want to do anything on Sunday because I got to get ready for Monday.
Right.
And it's almost like it takes so much mental energy when you're in that time period to get ready for Monday that you really discount the whole day of Sunday because
you're
too busy thinking about Monday. You have anything to say to people that might, you know, be experiencing that as to how they kind of, I don't want you to share how they can get past it yet, but maybe what's going on at a more deeper level with regards to their psyche?
Yeah, sure. And, what I notice is that sometimes it's anxiety, just thinking about what is Monday going to bring, like what's ahead? Are they going to be able to get what's done needed for work? You know, just if there's any issues with coworkers or employers, they're just thinking, anticipating what's going to happen. And often we worry about things that never happen. And what I always tell people is that even though it's Sunday, we only have two off days. We have Saturday and Sunday. Don't try to, because knowing people wake up Sunday morning like, oh, got to get ready for work. Try to do something relaxing. At least give it till the evening until you start thinking about getting ready for the next day, because otherwise you lose the whole day just anticipating Monday. So I know for me, Sundays, I like to not have plans. I like to just kind of stay in my PJs and watch movies. Like I just like, that's what I do. It's my day of rest. So just choose something that you do that kind of is relaxing for you and something that promotes your self-care, where something that you enjoy doing or, you know, just something that brings you joy, I should say. And just try to do that and focus on doing that. And then in the evening, you can start gearing up and getting ready for Monday, but don't let it consume the whole day.
I like that. I like that because I know people, you know, they start thinking about you know, they have to get ready for Monday. And if you have small children, you know, or school age children, you know, you're thinking about, okay, I got to get the kids stuff ready. I got to get them situated for the week. I got to get my clothes ready. You know, if you're like me, I'm kind of anal. Like, I got to get my clothes ready for the next day.
I understand.
You know, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And
got to get everything in order.
Yeah, exactly. And so sometimes I know when my kids were little, sometimes, you know, they were very active. And so there were things that they would do on Saturday that, you know, we were out busy doing stuff because they were, you know, very active. But on Sunday, it was really this routine that I had with regards to, okay, I got to get them ready. I got to iron the clothes for the week. I got to, you know, make sure so-and-so, if I'm not going to be able to get my daughter to dance or my son to whatever athletic sport he was participating in to practice, you know, got to get that lined up. And it was almost like Sunday became another day of work, even though it was work for my family, you know. And then of course I'm from a family where Sunday you cook the big dinner, right? You have the big Sunday dinner. So it was all of that. And a lot of times it was like, wow, I feel like I just worked. Instead of working 5 days a week, I worked 6 days a week because Sunday is a day of like complete prep for the week to come.
Exactly.
So what you're saying is to just really try and relax and not let that consume you, right?
Right. Even if it's just for a portion of the day, like just the early afternoon or the morning, try to do something for yourself. Because what ends up happening is when you wake up and you're like, oh, I got to do this. I know, I can even say this from personal experience. Like if I don't finish my work on Friday and I bring it home, the worst thing I can do is tell myself I'm going to do it Sunday, because I'll wake up Sunday morning like, oh, I don't want to do it, because it's supposed to be my day off. It's supposed to be my day of rest. So I would rather work late Friday and get it done than bring it home for the weekend, because I end up having so much anxiety just thinking about having to do it. And I spend more time worrying about it than actually doing it. So just carve out some time for yourself on Sundays and then give yourself the evening to get ready. And I'm the mom who gets everything ready. I have two kids and I have one in daycare, and it's just like getting the bottles, getting the clothes. But let's at least wait, you know, until the evening to start that.
Yeah. Okay. I gotcha. So that's one tip already, you guys. There are several tips in that one thing that
there we
you
go.
Can do to help with that. And I'm gonna come back probably to that question, because I want to give a different angle with regards to if people are experiencing challenges at work and why that might, you know, fit into what we're talking about. But I want to ask you, what are some statistics about the percentage of people who are happy at work? So let's kind of shift it from the negative to the positive.
Sure. Well, the statistics now are that, and this is from like the Conference Board of Job Satisfaction, and they do a yearly survey. And what they have found is that really 41.1% of people are shown to be happy at work. So the thing that's alarming about that is it's less than half. And they compared it into like to 1987, I think. So what is that? Almost 20 years. And at that time, 60% of people said they were happier at work. So the numbers are going down.
And wow.
Do you have
any idea why this is happening? Because I was a working person in 1987. And so, you know, do they have any, have they discovered or
well, there was
is there any correlation?
Right. They were seeing, like, sometimes because one thing is that people aren't satisfied with what they're getting paid. So that definitely affects their job satisfaction. They don't think they're making what they're supposed to. That's number one. Number two, because of the economy, people have more fear of losing their job.
Mm.
So as a result, they're taking jobs that they don't necessarily want, or that they're just very anxious on their job because they're always kind of worried about, you know, are they going to lose their job? Are there going to be layoffs? So that consumes them. And then just vacation and benefits. As you know, in the U.S., we have very limited vacation compared to other countries.
Right.
So just people feeling like they're just not getting enough vacation time and they're not getting the benefits that they should be getting with their current jobs. I think those are big factors in terms of influencing those numbers.
Wow. Now, do you think, I mean, because, you know, and when I'm thinking back to, you know, the 80s when I was a working gal, I think the same things, you know, existed then with regards to, you know, Silicon Valley is always very volatile. There to be times people got a job and then they get laid off and then they get another job and they get, so it's, you know, to me that always seems to be, if you're working in technology or any kind of industry like that, it's always, you know, I'm on, I hate to say it, but feast or famine. You're always anxious because you never know when they're going to come in and cut because whatever they rolled out didn't produce the numbers that they were expecting. So I think, you know, that's always been existent. And then I don't know anybody who's satisfied with what they make. You know, everybody always thinks they should make more,
really?
Right?
Really? You like know? Majority.
But what I'm getting at is back in the 80s, we didn't have technology like we have today.
Right.
And so I'm wondering if there's been any studies with regards to relating the technology that we have today that's caused those numbers to decrease versus, you know, back then when we didn't have access. For instance, you know, social media, people can get on social media and post, I'm angry or I'm stressed or, you know, my boss is a bonehead or whatever the case may be, and get it reverberated throughout the world and get responses back to that. Whereas, you know, that kind of feeds the, well, yeah, you're justified in not being happy or whatever. Whereas back in the 80s, we didn't have that. You know, you just had your little people in the cubicle next to you, maybe, that, you know, you shared the information with, and it just kind of stayed. So do you know if there's any studies with regards to...
There was an interesting fact that they had brought up, where they looked at how people were satisfied in terms of the technology that they were working with. So, you know, back in the 80s, you had the big, clunky computers. And And, you know, now people have, like, these faster computers. So they were assuming that people would be more satisfied with the technology, but it actually wasn't the case. People were more satisfied then because I think people now have more... Because we have more technology, we have more things to notice that isn't working right. So meaning that,
right.
you know... I need my Wi-Fi to be faster. I need this to happen. So I guess having more options doesn't necessarily hasn't necessarily led to people being happier. They're seeing more things to be wrong now.
Right. I mean, that makes sense. It's like when I go shopping for shoes, I'm a shoe-aholic.
Me too, a little.
Don't analyze me.
I am too. I'll join you in the diagnosis.
But it's like, you know, I have like, oh, I like this pair, all these, you know, I have five pairs. They all look good. And then it's like, okay, I got too many choices here. You know, Rochelle, you shouldn't be buying all five pairs of shoes. But how I solve that is I just buy all five pair, right? But it's like, I get that because having all those choices kind of makes you, you know, anxious over which one do I pick, and I want to pick the best one versus, you know, having one choice and it is what it is and you just got to deal with it. And mm-hmm. so I guess I could see how that would play.
I can even say that when I go to restaurants, like I like restaurants that just don't have so many things on the menu. Like mm-hmm. so when you go to these restaurants, you have like a 10-page menu with all these different, it's like too many options. Like, okay.
Mm-hmm. and of course, like on every page, you see something you want, right?
Yeah, it's just too many options. So I guess what they were proving was that having so many options and so many advances in technology hasn't necessarily led to more happiness at work. It just sometimes leads to a little bit more frustration because people are trying to get more things to work and sometimes have more complaints about what's not working.
Gotcha. I could totally see that. Now, say for the person that's out there and they just heard you talk about some of the signs and symptoms of how, you know, a person may be feeling if they're in a slump at work. Once they realize that they're in a slump, what is the next thing that they should do?
Okay. First thing I always say is to try to identify what's causing the slump. Because it could be a few different things. Are you happy at work? Is it the job that you're doing? Is it the position that you're in? Or is it something that, because sometimes people can be in a slump because they don't get along with their employer. So sometimes it can be different factors that's actually affecting you feeling this way and kind of having that blah mood and just not being as motivated. So the first step is identifying what's causing it. Another option of what could be causing it is things outside of your job. Are you having stresses at home? Are you having, you know, stress in your relationship or things going on with your kids? And is that spilling over into the workplace? So just trying to identify what it is the first step. And then once you figure out what it is, so say it's you're unhappy with your position. Well, maybe let's start seeking if there's other positions at the job that you're working at. Or is it actually the whole job? And we'll talk about that later. But is this really the career path that you want? I always believe that you get signs when you're not supposed to be somewhere. And you get these signs that it's just like, okay, this isn't the right fit. And you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. And you're not following your passion. And so I always say the first step is just trying to figure out what is exactly kind of causing that slump.
Okay, so here's a clicker. I said I was going to come back, and I think this is a great time to throw this in. So, you know, someone's listening to the show, or there may be thousands of people listening to the show, and realize, you know what, that kind of is describing me. You know, I've got some personal stuff going on at home, you know, or, and I don't mean to take it, I don't mean to bring my baggage with me to work, but it's in me, and,
yeah, we're human.
You know, right? Or I've got this boss that is, excuse my language, but that is a complete asshole, and it's just stressing me to the max, and I feel like I'm this cat trapped in a box, in a cage, and I just can't get out. I can't quit my job because I need, you know, I need the money to support my family, or, you know, do what I need to do for my family. Or the field that I'm in is so specialized that I can't quit my job and make the money that I would make because it's such a specialized field that there are not many jobs out there, and this person is just feeling trapped. What would you say to people like that? Because I know, you know, when I was practicing as the nurse, it was like you never know what happened to the person right before you, and I still do that, I'm still practicing, but you never know what happened to the person right before they saw you, or what they encountered, or what they may be going through. And so we have some really crazy stuff happening today. But what would you say to those people that are feeling like they realize they're in a slump? They recognize some of the things that are going on in their life, whether it's personal or on the job, that's, you know, causing them to feel just really icky and not good about what they're doing, or they realize that they're not really doing what they want to do as far as their purpose and their passion. What would you say to them to help them along, you know, to help them somewhat get out of that place of, you know, negativity?
And I understand that saying, you know, if you're not following your passion, to find something new is much easier said than done, and it's usually a process, and sometimes it's not, especially in the economy that we're in now, it's not so easy to just pick up and leave a job and go find another one available, especially depending on where you live. But, you know, if you have to kind of stay in a job and there's things that you can't change, so like you gave a great example of an employer who just is just getting on your nerves and is just not supporting you at work, this is a time that you have to remember where your self-care is very important. So doing things to take care of yourself. If you can't change a job, we can help to change your perspective in terms of doing things, improving your outlook. So this is where I'm going to put my psychiatry hat on. But, you know, things that improve the mood. So trying to exercise. Those things can help. I know some people like to exercise in the morning before work. It's a mood booster. You got the endorphins going. Or even, it doesn't matter when you do it, as long as you try to at least exercise 2 or 3 times a week, that can be helpful. And also, talk to others for support. So if you're frustrated with something going on with your job, talk to somebody about it. And because sometimes just even talking about it and venting about it and somebody understanding your frustrations, that can be therapeutic. So just really going to others for support. And you can go to a counselor or a therapist, but even just talking to somebody that you trust, it doesn't necessarily have to be a professional, but somebody that you trust that you can really, who can really empathize with what you're going through. I think those are really important. And my last one is, if you like work in a place where you might not even have kind of, you're very enclosed, like a cubicle, or, you know, where you don't have windows, try to get outside. It really can make a big difference, like on your lunch break. Because, you know, sometimes because we're working so hard, and I do this a lot, you tend to eat at your desk and try to get everything done. But you need to get up and just go outside, take a walk, you know, just if you can get outside and really take the definition of a lunch break, what we're supposed to be doing, it really can help. And what's found is that when people get up and they kind of and they go and take a break, they notice that they're more efficient when they come back. So those are my tips of trying to get through it if kind of making that job change is something that you can't immediately do.
You know, those are wonderful tips, because in my practice, that's what I always tell people. And I'll share a quick story with you guys listening, that I work out, and I've been working out for many years. And I think it's one of the reasons why I look young and, you know, I'm stay fit and all of that. But there are times when, you know, we all go through periods of life where, you know, we have challenges. But what would help me is when I would go work out. And there are times that I just would rather take a behind whooping from my grandmother back in the day than to go work out, to go to the gym.
Oh, yeah.
But once I let the whole, it's the whole process of leaving the house. Once I left the house and I'm on my way, I'm good. it was during those times that I was not feeling good, you know, I'm mentally stressed or whatever, just didn't want to do, life is giving me curves and nothing's going right, or, you know, poor, I'm having a pity party for myself. It was during those times that I went to the gym and worked out that after I worked out, I felt so elated. I was so naturally high. I felt so good. I even may have discovered during the process of doing my workout a solution that came for something that I was dealing with, or just, you know, feeling really, really good. And yeah, I go back in and, you know, you're going back to the quote unquote challenges, but I think you feel, you step back into it with so much more power, clarity, and focus, and it's not energy draining, that it really, really helps you to really help you take care of yourself during those time periods. So I am definitely an advocate. And I also like what you share with regards to, you know, the people that work their tails off and they don't get out and they eat at their desk and they don't take any breaks and they're just always in for 8, 10, 12 hours in their, you know, their workplace and just, you know, doing what they're supposed to be doing, working, but they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, which is taking care of themselves first. I like how you said, just get out for a few minutes and, you know, go outside and get some fresh air. And it really does, you guys out there listening, it really does help to restore your clarity, your focus,
absolutely,
your energy. You know, it kind of breaks things up and, you know, you may be stagnant or stuck on a problem. You go out and you get that fresh air. Oxygen is the best drug we have that's natural, right? Because you come back in and that problem that you might have been stuck on, you may discover a solution real quickly because you've got a fresh breath of air, so to speak. So she just gave some phenomenal tips, and I'm highly recommend that you guys, as simple as they sound, sometimes the most simplest things are the things that work the best, and they work the best for us. So pay attention to what she's saying here because she is definitely right. Now, is there any way for people to avoid getting in the slump? Say, you know, okay, they realize they're in a slump. They, you know, taking some of the action steps that you've given to help them proceed through their slump, so to speak. And now they're like, well, gosh, I'm starting to feel better. I'm starting to feel better about where I'm working, what I'm doing. How can I avoid feeling like this in the future? How can I avoid going back into that slump? Or, you know, burnt out period in the future? Is there anything that people can do?
And just keep following those tips. Like, you know, if you're just kind of getting up there in your lunch break or doing stuff that, trying to find things at work that keep you more engaged, just keep doing it. Don't, because sometimes when you're starting to feel better, you're like, okay, I'm doing good. So, you know, maybe I don't need to exercise this week, or I don't need to, you know, talk to this person for support. Just those same tips that I gave, just try to keep doing them and make them kind of a consistent part of your work schedule. Because what happens is if you stop doing those things and those things that take care of yourself, you can easily kind of fall back into that slump.
Any suggestions or tips on how people can make just the simplest little things that you discussed a normal part of their routine, where it's like it's so natural to them that it's like breathing. They don't really have to think about it. It just becomes ingrained. Any tips that you can share with those out there listening? Because I know people, you know, it's like the diet thing. They do the diet and they're losing the weight and everything's great. And then, you know, they stop the diet and they gain the weight back because they stopped doing what they were doing in the diet. They haven't made it a part of their life.
Example.
Any tips you can share?
You know, what I would say is just stay aware and just kind of do a mood check. If you realize that things are starting to kind of go south and you're starting to have more of a blah mood at work, or you're starting to get impatient with people, try to recognize it as soon as possible and say, wait a minute, listen. I feel like I'm going back into a slump. And do things for yourself. Of course, we talked about the exercise and getting outside during the day. But you know what? How about those benefits? Let's check those vacation days and maybe take some time out. Having a vacation, even if it's for like a day or two, can be so rejuvenating in terms of you come back with a fresh start. Or if you can't afford to go away, having a staycation. I've done this before where I just felt before kind of overwhelmed at work and I felt burnt out and I literally just took a day off. And I just relaxed, literally. Like, I ate my favorite food. I sat outside, and I did what I enjoyed. But what I found is that I needed it. And we do need some time away. So by doing that, I was able to come back on that Monday and be like, okay, let's go. So I think just trying to just stay aware of when you feel yourself slipping down into that slump, that will help you to kind of avoid it, because you'll be like, okay, something isn't right. I'm starting to feel myself kind of going back into those old habits. So, and write it out, because, you know, I'm somebody who loves to make lists. So, like, you know, write out what the things that you kind of have to remember to do. If you want to remember to exercise 2 or 3 days a week, put it on your schedule. You know, if you're joining a gym, pick which classes you want to go to. So remember to make a schedule of it so it becomes a part of your routine. So you won't be as easy, it won't be as easy to be like, okay, you know what, I'm not going to do it this week. The more you do it, the more familiar it'll become, and the more it'll become a part of kind of your weekly routine.
I love that. Another wonderful tip, you guys, is, you know how you make in your calendars appointments for the dentist, for the kids, for the husband, the wife, whatever the case may be, why not make an appointment with yourself
and exactly.
put exercise time or walking time or time out time for yourself? Because I think once we have it in our calendars, we're more apt to keep that appointment, whether it's with ourselves or others, you know. But a lot of times what happens is we say we're going to do something and we don't make that appointment with ourselves. So it's like, oh, you know what, girl, I gotta do this. So I'll do that later. And later never comes. However, when it's in our calendar, we're more apt to keep that appointment with ourselves. So, I think another phenomenal tip. Now, I want to take a left turn, I guess, so to speak, mm-hmm. with regards to the slump thing. And I want to talk a little bit about, you know, the relationships that people may have at work that may or may hinder their progress with regards to getting out of the slump.
Oh,
anything you want to share about that? Because I know a lot of times, you know, in the workplace, you have friends or colleagues that you think are your friends, and things happen, and, you know, just stuff, you know, it's just life, right? But relationships do play an important role in how we live and how we feel about ourselves. So any words of wisdom, anything you want to share with regards to that?
Oh, absolutely. And that's something that I've seen personally in terms of the dynamic of a workplace. Just be careful of your relationships, because there are certain people who are just naturally complainers, like who just, even if things are going great, even if, you know, there's nothing particular going on that really is bad, they can still be complainers. And what happens is it can be contagious. I always say that kind of negative thinking and complaining can be contagious. So if you have a person who's kind of always complaining about your boss or always complaining about, you know, kind of the hours, if you keep hearing that, like, even if you're happy, after a while, it's going to start taking its toll on you. You're going to start believing it. And so I always say, be very, very careful. We can't control what other people say, but you can control what you're around and how much it affects you. So if you notice that there's complainers or people who just tend to be more negative or even, like, maybe negative towards you, like they're always kind of talking about the kind of work that you're doing, try your best to keep your distance and keep it as professional as possible. Just because you work with somebody does not mean that you have to be friends. You can be respectful, but you don't have to be friends with everybody that you work with. And sometimes people get wrapped up in trying to, you know, get along with everybody. Of course, you can try to, you know, get along and keep it a calm workplace setting, but you don't have to be best friends. Like, if you're somebody who likes to keep the workplace separate from your home and your social life, you don't have to mix the two. You can just have a great time, be all smiles when you're at work, but then you're like, okay, it's 5:00, and, you know, I'm gone. Like, you know, I'm going on to I'm going home. So you don't necessarily have to have the two overlap if you don't want to. So just be kind of very careful of the boundaries that you set with your coworkers.
So now here's something that with regards to that. So you mentioned, like, you know, those people that, you know, we always have, as my daughter calls them, negative Nancys.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, oh my gosh, you know, the sun, it could be a beautiful sunny day and it's too sunny, you
yeah.
know, or, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have, and sometimes we have to work really close with these people. And as you know, we all have this energetic field. And so when you're constantly being bombarded by someone that has such negative energy all the time, they're always negative, they're always antagonistic, they're always, you know, looking for chaos, they're always kind of stirring the pot, so to speak. Any tips to share that can help someone that just really, you have to work with them, but you don't want to absorb their junk, so to speak, because you got your own junk, you don't want to absorb theirs. Any words of wisdom that you can share with those listening that can help them to stay grounded in their energy versus absorbing the other person's energy and falling into that syndrome of, you know, the negative Nancy.
Yeah, you know, what I can tell, and that's really one of the most difficult situations at work, when you have to work very closely with somebody like that, and just trying to really just set your boundaries, really trying to limit the time that you spend with them only to the time that's needed. So if you're working with the negative Nancy and you have to do projects together, okay, it's fine to do projects together, but you don't have to have lunch together. You don't have to do outings after work. You don't try to just limit it to only the time that you need to get the project done or whatever kind of work you're doing together. And then after that, distance yourself if you can. And I know this is a little bit more difficult if you kind of live and work in the same office. But trying to just distance yourself as much as you can and remain respectful. And one thing that I noticed that helps is that if you're working with a person like that, just keep the relationship a work relationship. Because what happens is if you start kind of disclosing personal stuff about yourself and you're kind of bringing them into your world, they can start saying that negative stuff about what's going on with you. So now it's getting personal. So it's not just about the job. Now we're getting kind of more of that negativity is spilling over into your life. So I just say, if you're dealing with a person like that, try to just keep it professional, keep it just work.
Well, that's great, because I know there are people out there that have to deal with that, and and sometimes it can be very, very challenging to, you know, have to work with someone that, quote unquote, is a negative Nancy, and still maintain your positivity or your positive energy. So I like what you had to share with regards to that. And hopefully, if you guys out there listening are experiencing any of that, you can put that into play for yourself and experiment with what works best for you. Here's another clicker to that. So you have that person who's the negative Nancy, and they realize that you've just been owning your own positive energy, and you know, you're cordial and you're professional and all of that, but you're kind of like keeping the distance, right? And this negative Nancy person has noticed that you're kind of keeping the distance. So they go and tell the boss something to the effect that, I don't know, you know, people make up crazy stuff, but it's reflective negatively upon you that, say, maybe you're not a team player or you're distancing yourself from the team. Is there a specific or good way to handle something like that? Because now, you know, negative Nancy's ego is hurt because you're not all up in her Kool-Aid, so to speak. But in actuality, you're just doing what works best for you to keep everything going well. Is there anything that you can suggest how people handle that aspect of the whole personal relationship thing at work?
And that's unfortunate when it gets to that point where they're going to the employer and kind of saying things that may not be true, or they're over-exaggerating things. I think if you're doing your job and you're doing what needs to be done and stuff is, you know, getting done on time, that's really what matters. So I would just hold your ground. So if your employer does come to you and say, you know, this is being said, be like, listen, I'm getting the job done. I'm happy here. And this work style works best for me. And, but of course, you know, if there's something you need me to do, let me know. But I would just kind of just remember that you're doing what works best for you. And as long as the work is getting done, I think that's what's most important. But what I noticed that kind of with the negative Nancy's, I like that term, I'm going to start using it, is that they are more likely to talk if they have an audience.
So yes.
If you're a person who, you know, who's always listening and kind of co-signing what they're saying, of course, it's going to kind of amp them up. They're going to be more likely to kind of complain and say kind of all those negative things. But if they notice that you're not really listening anymore, or you're putting a positive spin like on things, like they're complaining about how hot it is, and you're like, well, you know, I'm glad it's not raining. It's a really beautiful day. You always kind of spin it in a positive way. After a while, they may get the hint. And I've seen this personally. Like, they stop coming to you with as much negative stuff. So that's another positive that could come out of you making these changes. So they'll be more like, maybe they'll go to another coworker who would rather listen to the negative stuff and would kind of go through all that negativity with them. So I would say just kind of, it may work out in your favor in terms of they may not do it as much when they start noticing that you're distancing yourself and trying to stay more positive.
Love it. I love it. You just, again, you guys, wonderful words of wisdom. Again, seems so simple, but so powerful. And again, sometimes the simplest things are the most powerful. Okay, so now I want to jump back into, have you, with regards to, you know, your years of education to become, you know, board certified psychiatrist, and, you know, the work that you've done at, you know, to get to where you are and going through all those years of schooling and training and, you know, just being in touch with your client, your patient, so to speak. Have you ever felt like you were in a slump at any time?
Oh, yes. I've been in one, and I think the reason looking back, the reason that I have been in a slump is because I was taking a job for financial reasons and I wasn't chasing the right thing. So, you know, what happened was, and sometimes, it's, and everybody can, outside of medicine, this can happen often where we're looking more at the paycheck rather than the actual work. And the paycheck is just so enticing. But what happens is if you're not happy at the job, you will get burnt out really quickly. So my slump went to burnout. We'll talk about the difference between those two. But basically, I was just tired all the time. I noticed that I was always watching the clock. You know, I'm going in Monday morning. I'm already counting down to when Friday's coming. That's never a good sign. Never a good sign. But, you know, just watching the clock and just getting frustrated. I just noticed that even my demeanor changed. I was more irritable. And and it took me like maybe about a month or two to finally realize that, wait, I'm really not happy with this. And I would notice it the most when I was driving to work. Like, I was just like, oh, you know, like I just was not, I just had that kind of gray cloud over me. I just wasn't happy to be there. And I realized now it's because I had taken the job for financial reasons rather than for something that I'm passionate about. And, you know, with especially in medicine where we do so much training and so much school to get to this point, it's really sad when people may choose something that they're not necessarily happy doing when you've invested so much time. So I realized that. So I've definitely been in one. So I'm a lot of this stuff that I'm telling you is from personal experience.
Wow. Okay. So see, you know, you guys out there, we all go through this.
Yes.
No one is immune to it. We kind of like to think, you know, well, maybe, you know, Sarah Jane or Michael or Melvin or whoever, they always seem to be so happy-go-lucky and like they're really enjoying their job. But I guarantee that some part in their life as they travel down their path to bliss, that they've experienced this as well. We all go through it. It's, I think it's natural for humans to do that. It's just being aware of it. And when you become aware of it, you can actually begin to make the changes. Now, you mentioned something that I want to dive into. You mentioned the fact there's a difference between slump and burnout. Can you expand upon that?
Sure. And I think a slump is when you're on the road to burnout. So the slump is kind of when you notice that you're just not as motivated, the mood is kind of blah. But then if the slump keeps going deeper, then you get to the burnout phase. So I think the burnout is just like kind of more severe phase where you just really, you kind of hit the bottom, where you're just not motivated at all, you're kind of falling behind with your work. Another sign is just like it's a struggle for you to get to work every day. You know, usually when people are burnt out, they start, you know, being late more often. They just, you know, take longer lunch just because they're just dreading going to work. And you can see the results in their work in terms of the productivity. They're just not doing as much as they used to and not on time. So I always say, like, that's why it's always good to kind of catch the slump so you don't go all the way to burnout, because it's hard to get out of that once you get to it.
Wow. So, okay. I like that, because basically being in a slump is, here I go to the medical stuff.
Yeah, come on.
Being in a slump is a sign and symptom of you're on your way to burnout, kind of like.
There you go, you know, it's on the road.
High blood pressure is a sign and symptom that you have a, you know, compromised cardiovascular system,
there
right?
There you go.
And you can do things and both to curtail it from you hitting the wall, so to speak. I like that. Now, you know, I want to kind of just explore this a little bit of the seriousness, because we've had some really tragic things happen in the last couple of weeks with regards to people on the job and, you know, what's happened. And, you know, my heart goes out to the people that have lost their lives being on the job, being just doing a job and being on a job and being at the wrong place at the wrong time, so to speak, when you have someone that's disgruntled, former employee or current employee come in and just take out their anger on whoever, you know, is there, so to speak. anything to say, because I see this happening more, and to be honest, I'm not really sure if it's happening more or if it's just because technology, we hear about it more. The first time I remember hearing this is when the first thing happened with the post office back, and I think that was in the 80s, you know, where the post office worker came in and basically, as a quote unquote goes, went postal. Yep. And now you see that, and you hear that all the time. You know, it seems like it's getting more and more prevalent in our society. Is there something that people on the job can do or be more aware of in an effort to maybe protect themselves or to help someone that they feel might be on that path? You know what I mean? It's like people don't disclose, yeah, I'm going to come in and blow up, but sometimes they do. You know what I'm saying? So is there anything that we can do as being employees or employers to keep a keen eye on just what might, you know, to prevent these incidents from happening more?
Right. And I think just communicating, really talking to them, just talking about, you know, even doing surveys or just having open feedback, having discussions, like having a meeting at least once a month about where the employees give feedback in terms of things that they think that can be improved or things that they, or just any suggestions they may have. I think just communicating about it, because a lot of times when people get this frustrated and when it gets to that point of where it gets violent or they have these outbursts, it's because they feel like they were unheard. And they just feel like they just kind of have not, their suggestions or their how they've been feeling hasn't been heard, basically, from either the other employees or their employers. So mm-hmm. I think communicating is a huge part of that. And also, a lot of people don't know about this, and I always tell people to really try to look into it, but sometimes there's actually counseling services that jobs offer, where they have, like, an employee assistance program where they can actually have people on staff that, you know, you can get counseling through your job and have benefits. And a lot of people don't know that their jobs may actually have that particular benefit. So just see if there's anything going on where you can just have somebody to talk to. You know, one thing with me being a psychiatrist, of course, I'm always going to say that talking about it and therapy is really, really helpful. And I think if you are able to kind of nip it in the bud when this level of unhappiness has reached this point, then maybe we can start doing things to kind of reverse that and get back to that happier place before it gets to that point that we've been seeing in the news where it's gotten violent and lives have been lost.
Wow. Yeah, I thank you for sharing that, because I, you know, there are a lot of employers that do offer that employee assistance program. And I know some people feel, you know, depending on how they were raised and that kind of stuff, feel shameful about going to talk to someone. And you guys out there listening, you should know that what you discuss in these programs or, you know, with this assistant employee assistant programs, what you should know is that they should not be sharing that information with the employer. However, I do know of one situation where a person did go, and it's a huge medical founded corporation, huge, you know, and they have this program, and the person went because she was, you know, in a slump or, you know, feeling to the point of burnt out, so to speak. She went and talked to them, and what they did was actually go back and tell her supervisor.
Oh, no. Yeah.
So then that created a horrific relationship and atmosphere in the department, and it became very toxic. But typically and generally, that they shouldn't be disclosing that. I think I'm not sure if that's part of the HIPAA, you know, confidentiality stuff.
It's supposed to be completely confidential.
That's what I thought. Yeah. But just so you guys out there know, those are available to you. Mm-hmm. You know, check with your employer. Now, okay, I want to get back to the burnout thing, because, you know, it seems like we go through these phases where people are super happy and elated and everybody's running along and all 12 cylinders and the Maserati is humming. And then we go through this period where, okay, only 6 cylinders are working. People aren't happy. You know, it's kind of cyclical, so to speak, with regards to burnout. How can being in a slump affect you physically? Because I think a lot of times people discount their physical symptoms or they discount their body talking to them. Can you share some signs and symptoms of how it can affect you physically and what a person, once they realize this, what they should do to prevent anything further happening to them?
Right. And, you know, the thing with stress is it can affect the body really from head to toe. So you can start off by getting headaches. You can even get the elevated blood pressure, which we were talking about earlier. But even pain. I know a lot of people, especially, they get pain in their back. And also that shoulder area, you know, the lower neck is where they notice kind of that tension. So just remember that stress isn't something that affects you mentally. It's something that can affect you physically. And just kind of when all of these things kind of go on for a long period of time, it can take a worse toll on your body. Other things that you may notice is that your energy is lower, you're more tired. And when people are more tired, they're more likely to overeat. So as a result, they might be craving carbs a little bit more because, you know, that's part of the body's reaction is that when you're stressed, you're more likely to kind of crave sweets or crave carbs. And what happens is this may lead to weight gain, which may lead into even more medical problems, as you know. So it's just always kind of pay attention because your body will tell you. Like as soon as you get into work, I had one time I had a patient who had mentioned to me that they get, as soon as they got into work, like their neck would feel so tight. She went to the doctor and she was just like, something must be wrong. I must have like a slip disc, something. Because it went all the way down to kind of her upper back too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she did all these tests and everything. And then she ended up coming to me and we realized it was the anxiety. It was the anxiety. Mm-hmm. That's all it was. Because I asked her about the timing of it. I said, does it happen on the weekend? Does it happen when you're at home? She's like, no, it only happens during the day when I'm at work. I said, well, there we go. There's the correlation. And we realized it was the stress of it. And she had actually had some major change happen where a lot of people were getting laid off. But she was having a lot of anxiety about possibly getting laid off. And it was playing out as a physical symptom for her.
Wow. Wow. So you guys, you know, Dr. Dion Metzger is bringing full front everything that we talk about here on the show with regards to just paying attention to yourself. Putting yourself first. I always tell people that you can't be 100% for those that you love and care about if you're not taking care of yourself first. Because at the end of the day, if you put yourself last, you never get a chance to take care of yourself. And pay attention to any physical signs that you may be experiencing because the body always talks to you is that we discount stuff and we choose not to listen until we have something manifest such as, you know, high blood pressure or, you know, a tremendous amount of weight gain or chronic headaches or migraines or things of that nature. Your body's always talking to you before an actual illness comes into play. So don't discount the little signs and symptoms, you know. Of course, don't be a hypochondriac and go to the doctor for everything. But just pay attention to what your body's telling you and try to figure out where that's coming from. It could it be, like she said, her patient, you know, got the tension in her neck that was traveling down her spine. She thinks she had a slipped disc every time she went to work. It was really the anxiety of being at work and what was going on at work that was causing her physical symptoms. And had she not paid attention to it or had she not, you know, sought out help to figure out what was going on, she may have developed something where she could have put herself in a situation where she could have injured her back or her neck or something because, you know, the body's telling you. So please, please, please pay attention to what your body is saying to you. Okay, so that's let me get off my soapbox. I'm the nurse, you're the doctor, right? Now, is there a possibility for someone to experience a permanent slump?
I hope not. I don't think so. I think you'd have to recognize it sooner or later that you need to make a change. I mean, I guess it is possible that you can be in a permanent one, but what's best is that it be as short-lived as possible. Because what happens is that permanent slump is going to turn into the burnout. And then things are going to start slipping. So either, you know, your work efficiency or something's going to start, things aren't going to line up as well as they used to. And then you might start having more problems. Your job might become in jeopardy. You might be getting into more kind of conflicts with your coworkers. So the thing is, when you hit that burnout stage, it starts getting scary because now you might have some other issues that will bring on even more stressors that if you're not getting your job done. So my answer is yes, it can be permanent, but really I hope that it never gets to that point.
Good. So that gives you guys out there listening some hope that, you know, it's always a temporary situational thing, especially when you learn to pay attention to what's going on. And when you do that, you can, of course, as we say, course correct to make sure things get better. So that's positive. So if you're experiencing a slump, just know that you can too get through this. You just need to, you know, pay attention to what Dr. Metzger has shared on the show today and start putting some of that information immediately into your life.
Right.
And watch what manifests.
Right. It doesn't, and I just want a lot of people to know it does not have to be permanent. Just like you said, it can be temporary. And that's why I was hesitant to use that word. It does not have to be. It's something you can get out of.
That's wonderful. Now, is there anything else? Let me see. Here we go. Here's something. How does a person know the difference between having a bump in the road versus really needing to make a career change with regards to, quote unquote, the slump they may be feeling that they're in right now?
And just kind of, and that's where you kind of have to ask yourself questions, because of course, with jobs, there's going to be times that you might hit a slump or you might get frustrated and things aren't going the way that they're supposed to. But if it's something that's more persistent, and you realize that there's nothing in your job that really keeps you engaged, and you're nothing that you really feel passionate about, then I would say, okay, well, maybe it's time to start considering some other career paths and thinking about what initially got you into that field. Was it, you know, like my example, was it something that was financially driven? Or was it something that your parents wanted you to do or your spouse wanted you to do? Because, you know, that can have a huge influence sometimes, too, things that look good on paper.
Mm-hmm.
So what got you into the field in the first place? Was it something that you wanted to do? Was it something that you were passionate about that brought you to it? Or was it something that somebody else wanted you to do or you're doing for other reasons? So just think about kind of the initial drive that got you to that job, and then if you truly enjoy it. And I think if the answer to the to not enjoying it and not feeling passionate about it is a no, then I would, or it's a yes, that you don't feel passionate about it, I should say, then that's the time that you should start thinking about other career paths and, you know, seeing what you like. I always say, man, life is short, and you spend so many hours. I think it's like more than one-third of your waking hours at work if you work like a 40-hour week. So it's even more if you work more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Life's too short to spend that huge chunk of time doing something that you're not happy doing. So if you have the power to do that and you're ready, start looking into something else. Life is short.
Love it. And I'm gonna end our segment with famous rapper Drake, who says, you know, he has a song and it's, you know, the whole term YOLO.
Yeah.
You only live once. So you want to make sure that what you're doing is something that elates you and not deflates you, so to speak.
Oh, I love that.
I don't know where this stuff comes up. It just kind of comes. I have to say God is beautiful because he gives me words to say.
That, I love that.
Like, oh, girl, where'd that come from?
Mm-hmm.
But it's true. You know, you want to do something that elates you instead of deflates you, because as I like to say, the balloon bouquet, when you have this wonderful abundance of all these beautiful balloons and you're at the top, as you rise, you bring everybody else up with you. And you think of the balloon bouquet going up into the sky, they all rise together and it's really beautiful. But if you're deflated and you're at the top, the other balloons can't rise. And so those other balloons might be your family, your kids, your coworkers, your business, your, you know, whatever, people that you love and care about. If you're deflated, you guys can't rise as efficiently as you would. So that's just what I want to leave. Okay, so I gotta get to now, Dr. Dion.
Yes.
How would anyone who wants to get in connection with you, or we just have like in a real quick minute, can you let people know how they can get in connection with you?
Sure.
What you've got going on, any programs, classes, trainings, anything?
Sure. So I have a website. It's DionMetzgerMD.com. So DionMetzgerMD.com. And I'm also on social media. So same thing, DionMetzgerMD. I'm on Twitter and Instagram, as well as I have a Facebook page, which you can go and like, Dion Short Metzger MD. And I'm doing a lot of projects right now. I'm actually working and talking about relationships also. And I know we touched a little bit about that. Mm-hmm. And I'm working on an online course that will be available later this year called Is It Me? Are You Blocking Your Love? So we're going to talk about like things in terms of like, you know, just personal characteristics and things that sometimes people are wondering if maybe they're interfering with their relationship. So we're going to kind of get into that. And it's going to be out later this year. And yeah, and I'm always on social media, so tweet me. I'd like it. I'd like to talk and interact with people. And you know, if you want to like my page on Facebook, we can chat on there as well.
I love it. So you guys out there listening, she gave her information, Dr. Deanna Metzger, MD.com. Look her up on Twitter. Connect with her. She's a beautiful lady, the beautiful essence that's shining through. And she really is here to help heal the world, just like me and so many of you out there. So please connect with her again. And she's beautiful and she has some wonderful words of wisdom to share with you to help you have a simpler and more easier path as you travel down your path to bliss. So thank you, Dr. Dion Metzger, for being a guest on Blissful Living. It was a pleasure to have you.
Wonderful.
And for all of you guys out there listening, this is Rochelle Marie Lawson, the queen of feeling fabulous. And I hope to hear or see all of you on next week as we bring another show to you. But what I want to do is wish you peace to your mind, wellness to your body, and tranquility to your spirit. Go out and have a phenomenal Friday and a fabulous weekend. And we will see you or hear you or you will hear me next week. Okay. So everyone take good care, be healthy and well. And remember, it's all about you most of the time. Bye for now.
Thanks for joining Rochelle Marie Lawson for Blissful Living. To contact Rochelle and to find out more about Blissful Living and reducing stress in your life, just click on Blissful Living right here on the Double Wide Network. Please catch all of our Blissful Living shows on demand 24/7 on DoubleWideNetwork.com. Until next week, may your life be stress-free, happy, and blissful.